Welcome to Dominate for Two, a War Machine and Hordes podcast.
I'm Alex.
I'm Mark.
And I'm Benjamin.
And today we are talking about units, basically breaking different common unit types down by role.
Kilograms, pounds, meters, both metric and imperial.
I think it's just trolls that are on the imperial system.
Yeah, everyone else has moved to these far superior metric.
Yeah, so examining units by common role types and sort of where this discussion comes from is I see a lot of unit types that are commonly misplayed, principally early game skirmishers, support units, and small combat units, where people just don't make great tactical decisions with them in a lot of the games I've seen. So I really want to go into what these different roles are for, how to identify units that are like this, and then how to play them effectively.
So I've actually got a concrete example of this. I brought it up on our Phoenix episode, which was a while ago, but when I played into Legion, they decided to jam my skirmish unit with their Chosen, which is like one of their like hard-hitting like fighting units. And I think partially that was because they expected them to survive and they were willing to try and shift them over into a skirmish position. But they were basically trying to use like a hardline combat unit, especially one that's important into Madrak because you need the accuracy buff of the cavalry charges to try and jam my jam. And so it didn't work out so hot.
Yeah, that's basically bad value all the way down. The Chosen don't like being held in one place basically forever fighting chaff.
They're free spirits.
Yeah, fighting chaff that was going to jam them at some point anyways.
Well, also, I think we should actually start at the top end when it comes to units, just looking at list design, because that's really where how you look at your units comes from the most, because some lists will have units that are merely there as a scoring potential point, and the units are not actually part of the list purpose. So, you know, you can have
Swamp Gobbers Bellows Crew.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the most famous of all those mini units. And its goal is normally in a beast-heavy list, it's literally to run over and score something.
Or contest.
Or contest, right. And that's its purpose. And if it produces a cloud that's in a useful location, bully, but that's not what it's for. And in similar style lists that are especially either beast or specialized type of builds, you'll also have support units whose goal is not to be a unit, but to be support. You know, like you have the Dunian Knot, you have the Ice Witches.
Right. The Creelstone, the Choir.
Right. And while they are units, their purpose and the reason you're bringing them has really is just secondary to the fact they're a unit.
Right. You still need to really manage their formation, though. The Creelstone less so because it tends to run in a dense blob, but like
I actually slightly disagree with that. Proper spacing between sac pawn and avoiding AoEs slash effects like Ashes to Ashes. Well, you can't really avoid Ashes to Ashes, but right. You can kind of control how it bounces off of the Creelstone, because if they're allowed to hit multiple members of the Creelstone in one go, that's a big problem.
Right. Or like beast handlers or choir, like actually managing their formation is really important. Versus units like Ayana and Holt, Linus and Adrea, stuff like that. Those aren't really units. Like it says unit on the card and there's multiple models that have to be within, you know, X inches of each other. But the reality is they're just there to provide an ability. And they don't fall under this broad like positioning and strategy discussion.
Right. And the only reason I'm bringing that up is because this is something where we're going to be focusing on units. We're going to be looking more at casters who are running multiple units who are intended to work together more than, you know, just the random support unit off to the side in a list that is running either beasts or warjacks as a primary function.
Right. Yeah, and there's a couple of unit types, like, if you know you're going for something battle group heavy, like, picking the right kind of unit is really important to how your list is going to play overall. I think what you'll tend to want in an army where a lot of your points are going that direction is either small combat units or large skirmisher units.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue with the current version of the game is that many of the themes that benefit you taking either Warjack or Warbeast heavy builds actively stop you from taking the type of units you would normally prefer to have in those builds. So it's washed a lot of that out of the discussion, simply because the themes prevent a lot of that from happening.
Yeah, like, for example, Power of Dunia, since I'm the resident troll on this podcast and always have to bring them up for any example ever.
Troll.
Power of Dunia doesn't see a lot of play because their scenario is bad, and that's in large part due to the fact that they can only take 3 units.
Dunia,
Power
not
of Dunia,
Creel Stone,
and Rune Shapers.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, Dunia Na is a dedicated support unit that wants to hang super far back, so you shouldn't be scoring with them. And the Rune Shapers are really, I don't want to say bad, they might be worth their points, but when they don't count towards free points, they're actually kind of terrible. I almost, bit of an aside slash rant, I would love for them to take Power of Dunia and make it so instead of the free solo stuff, every 30 points of beast, you get a free unit of Rune Shapers.
Mm.
Just go back to the old
the Doom Shaper one. Runes of War.
Runes of War, that was the list I was thinking of.
Yeah, I kind of miss seeing that flexibility, to be honest.
I would be happy to never see Runes of War return, but, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, that's true across almost all the factions at this point, is that, you know, if you're going full Beast or you're going full Warjack, they basically have disallowed you from taking the kind of units that would be most optimal for screening or, you know, skirmishing.
Well, that's actually why I'm excited for New Ret. It'll probably be out by the time that this podcast comes out, but who knows. But the change to Forges of War to let you take battle mages.
Oh, yeah.
And like get, or we'll get free units of battle mages. And I'm seeing a lot of lists where you take 4 units of battle mages.
Mm-hmm.
I like the look of that. I think that's a way better way to create a battle group focused combined arms list that will actually play properly into scenario against the more infantry focused versions of lists.
Yeah.
Right.
But anyways, getting back to focusing on units. So we're going to make the assumption here with our discussion that we are looking at stacking units that have different abilities effectively on the battlefield with a caster who is designed and being played with the intention of delivering units effectively.
Or in the case of Maelok, you stack the same unit over and over and over again and just hope it works out. And most of the time it does.
Yes, but we'll talk about that build as well.
I mean, there are other casters than Maelok who do that. Like, that's kind of Krios 2's road to success, you know, to whatever extent that exists.
Yeah, but I don't know. You're more into Protectorate right now than I am.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Krios actually benefits from a little bit of diversity in his, like, unit makeup. It's not like Maelok where it's like, if you're going to bother spending points on units, it's only going to be posse. And mm-hmm. then, like, maybe you, like, split out for some solos or, like, the Cauldron support unit.
Right.
And that's, like, it.
Well, the Cauldron's also free in that theme, so.
Well, I think this is a good opening to venture into what the roles are and how to identify units that fulfill on this effectively. So the roles that I put together before recording are skirmishers, mainline combat units, support units, and then standoff shooter units. Now, of those types, standoff shooters generally tend to be the least valuable because they hold static positions on the board or operate best from static positions.
So an example for people would be like Trencher Long Gunners.
Right, Trencher Long
Gunners. Which are amazing.
Trencher Long Gunners are a rare example of a good standoff shooter unit because they're
Winter Guard Riflemen?
Their output is high enough to merit. So that's actually the second way of playing these types of units, like Winter Guard Riflemen or House Guard Riflemen, is constantly moving and attempting to whittle down other units in, you know, progressive stages. But of these roles, I think it's the least valuable because it involves maintaining the most distance from your opponent for as long as possible. And this is a game where you generally want to get to the center. So your opponent is moving forward to get to the center of the board. You're not matching them at the same pace or actively retreating. So strategically, there's some problems.
Well, yes and no, though. I mean, I think it really depends on the faction because Signar, for example, especially with the Trencher build, really doesn't necessarily agree with that at all. Like, they're very happy having, you know, the Long Gunners sit there and just tear things off the table. But I also think it depends. You know, obviously, there's plenty of really good lists that have, like, one dedicated shooter to contribute to, you know, like that early peace trade phase of the game, which then gives you the ability to get the scenario in the center without having to throw stuff there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those units seem to be kind of like a careful balance between like low risk attrition advantage and lacking in scenario presence, because they don't set a scrimmage line that makes it hard for your opponent to contest stuff. Sometimes they aren't even in zones, depending on how aggressively positioned the zones are. But they're able to fight in such a way that they don't risk themselves, by and large.
Right, yeah, but, exactly. But they're definitely, that is definitely the minority of those type of units, because I know a lot of factions have shooting units that all they do is shoot, who don't have that level of contribution, and then they really do start kind of falling down. And, you know, there's a ton of factions where you kind of look at it and you're like, well, you know, Winter Guard Riflemen in the Winter Guard theme with Vlad 1 are potentially amazing, but outside of that combination they really start falling down. Mm-hmm. Because then they start missing the fixer of having signs of importance, which is of course one of the best fixers in the game, and they start missing having just sort of the overwhelming volume of first hitting ability.
So actually this weekend I played against Irusk 2 in the Winter Guard theme, and I definitely noticed the lack of what's it called, signs importance for the purposes of output. I was respecting the gun threat way too much. The mortars were obnoxious with fire for effect, mm-hmm. but I was like freaking out. Like he also only had like two rockets out of all of his stuff, mm. and it was kind of a more like get in there with a giant ball of tough, like OG Mark II style. But like he definitely had some dedicated shooting. I definitely saw that like they were missing that kind of just like general dial up.
Mm-hmm. And obviously that list, you know, for Kotor has fallen off because of the presence of a bunch of things that just flatly ignore it or effectively ignore it. You know, like the Krix Slayer spam obviously is not terribly fussed by that build, though it's still probably one of the best answers into it if you're doing ranged. But, you know, if you're looking at a faction that has the ability to take a ranged unit that seems solid but doesn't have like that overwhelming ranged alpha, then yes, that unit becomes sort of problematic. But again, it depends, you know, on the caster. Like if you're looking at the Scorn has the ventilators, right? With the guys with the little air gun.
Venators, not ventilators.
I like ventilators better.
That is a much funnier name for them.
They're generally sort of a second tier unit in most accountings, you know, especially when you look at Scorn and how aggressive and good their melee presence can be in these days. Mm-hmm. But with the Fat Guy and the Palaquin, with two of the battle engines, suddenly they become really interesting, because between the feat and the fact that you have battle engines who are really pushing the center and controlling space, it really gives them the option to perform at a level which is normally above where they would be.
Right. They're not forced into a skirmishing type role. They can, okay, the battle engines are holding this down, we can stand back and shoot now.
Right. And they can also meaningfully contribute by adding damage or removing threats to the battle engines, which amplifies the effect of the battle engines being in the center, which is an important role.
Right. And I would, like, all this is pointing to, I think, what would really help here is just like an identification, like how to figure these types of units. It's low risk attrition advantage, mostly created by distance and the ability to hit first, a strong tendency to want to preserve that distance. And then these,
which therefore leads to low scenario pressure.
Right.
Right.
And then these units just like, and this is a difficult niche to balance, or rather, if you make this niche ever too strong, game balance runs away from you completely.
Mm-hmm.
These units tend to be not good. Well, they tend to have power problems. Like, I think the hardest you're going to see them hit is like Winter Guard Rifle Corps with rockets, you know, or Trencher Long Gunners are obviously the hardest hitting, and they just make value out of really how much damage they put downfield.
Hollow men are also in a similar position, because while they don't get the double shot, they get, I think, same POW CRAs, and they have like the apparition to kind of control it a little bit better.
I would actually put hollow men in a skirmishing role, but
yeah, they're kind of a generalist. But I've definitely seen setups, especially with the King of Nothing, where they are kind of basically discount long gunners,
mm-hmm.
that can like easily like switch gears if you need them to.
Yeah, I would say like to identify this kind of unit, range 12 is sort of your cutoff. Like if you're not meeting range 12, you generally don't have the range to inflict casualties for more than one round at low risk. And you know, the other like hard hitting and you know entry here that I'd say is Stormfall Archers. They really want to preserve distance, just pick a position and shoot from it forever. But Stormfall Archers in the grand scheme of things actually do very little damage.
Well, honestly, I think Rhett shooting in general has been suffering from this for a while with both their House Guard Riflemen and the Stormfall Archers, where they look pretty solid when you're building a list. And I remember I've tried to use them a few times and I'm like, oh, these seem good, until you get them on the table and they are missing either the standoff time or the bump they need to turn up their effectiveness so that it works.
Right. They don't do enough damage to make a difference.
Right. And that's the problem, because the House Guard Riflemen, you're like, wow, these seem really good. The solo can give them some really crazy useful abilities, but they really don't get enough shots off in a given game to meaningfully remove things. And then once they get engaged, they're just minced.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's a hidden truism. So like these units are generally most effective against other units, unless you have, you know, something like the long gunner's ability to reroll damage and pick column, which makes their effective appreciable damage really high.
Mm-hmm.
But like for the most part, these types of units, because of their low value attacks, are generally only good at fighting other units. And
specifically single wound infantry. They very rarely venture into the territory where they can threaten medium based infantry, because if they're in that kind of math, they're already starting to encroach on hitting heavies.
Yeah. Yeah. Sort of the what I've been taking as a truism here is if one unit knocks another unit like down to 40% or less, that other unit that they just knocked down is effectively dead. Like it will not be able to contribute a ton with its attacks unless it's got like really astronomical, like weapon master high powered melee attacks. And you'll probably be able to pick it up with loose incidental fire in future turns. So like units are effectively dead once they've lost 60 to 70%. And these units are trying to do that.
Also, another thing that I think has affected the value of a lot of the sort of middle-of-the-road shooting units is the preponderance of giving battle engines effective shooting now.
Yes.
And the problem with that matchup is that it used to be you would take a lot of these sort of middle-of-the-road shooting units to kill other infantry, into which they were fine. However, their stat line is always really meh. Like, they don't have super high defense. They have zero armor 90% of the time. And that's exactly the stat line every battle engine in the game loves to see. And so in almost every faction, you got a battle engine that either shot as effectively or more effectively than these units and also did something else. And I think that for the same price point competitiveness, the battle engines really knocked a lot of these non-super niche units out.
So I would disagree with that assertion, mainly because Scorn and Krix are pretty much the only battle engine heavy factions right now. You like other factions, there's the Grim One Creel Company list, but that's kind of like a weird outlier. I think only like 3 or 4 out of the like 20 something troll players at WTC were playing that list. Like it's not commonplace like Double Wraith Engine or Double Turtle is. And I don't think any other faction is really taking that many battle engines, so
Convergence.
I mean
well, those like, three factions.
Well, and
Teps for days.
Well, and the Teps like stomp that kind of unit. But
the Teps can reliably put hurt into anything. That's like the magic of them.
Well, like you look 2 years ago, though, you saw exactly the same thing with the old gun carriage. Like I was running two of them and their job was to just smash skirmishing or shooting infantry that couldn't do anything to them.
And so more specifically, what I would posit is that the reason that those things have gone away is not because of the battle engines, but rather because medium base infantry. Those skirmish units are great. Or not skirmish units, those shooting units are great against other skirmishing units. They're great against other shooting infantry. They're great against single wound infantry. even to an extent, they're pretty okay into heavies, because heavies have a finite amount of tax and a finite amount of board presence, mm-hmm. such that you can just keep on feeding them stuff and move on with your life.
Well, I mean, but I would say, like, if you look at Rhett, for example, I would say there was a direct replacement of most Rhett Rifle Guard units with the Cricket.
But the Cricket's not seen play.
But I'm just saying, the people who were taking shooting Rhett, between the Harpy and the Cricket, I think if you're looking for volume of shots, those two things have just flat replaced having riflemen on the table.
I'll agree with the Harpy, but I think without massive numbers of battle engines, like, you occasionally see them, but they're not what's pressing out these units, in my opinion.
But, I mean, when you look at the scheme of the point values for what you're getting, like, the most factions have a battle engine that's a more compelling argument for the role of delivering that type of shooting into infantry while also doing something else.
Yeah. And I think you guys are both right. Like, more compelling alternatives are pushing them out. And then, you know, these kinds of units only get value against specific targets. If those kinds of targets are going away, there's no reason to take them.
Right. And the only reason the Signar long gunners are proving to be so amazing right now is because of the strict limitations on the theme, in which you end up taking another unit whose job it is to keep the long gunners from being engaged for as much of the game as possible.
Right.
And so the long gunners continue to get their value turn over, turn over, turn, because you have the rest of the army essentially feeding itself into keeping them active.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point to transition into skirmishers, which are units that have a lot of early game presence, either through advanced deployment speed or the ability to continue moving and projecting threat downfield. Skirmisher's primary job is basically, like, to grease the wheels of engagement and get you favorable terms, whether that be by buying time in a specific area of the board or fighting your opponent's army and taking out casualties and dictating that attacks have to be positioned against them to make the lines meet. Skirmishers tend to pack similar kinds of weapons to shooters for, like, ranged weapons,
but much shorter ranged.
Much shorter ranged, and, you know, just the way they seem to be designed, at least the successful units I would point to, they also have a broader suite of capabilities. Like, they can handle a much more versatile range of targets, or at least with some kind of support can handle a broader range of targets. Another common hallmark of skirmishing units is almost all skirmishing units that are worth the, you know, that are worth the time and money, have some sort of strong defensive measure in place, like one or more strong defensive measure to keep them in place, you know, for longer than a single turn of the fight starting.
15, 16, tough, steady.
Yes. Well, yeah, we'll start with Mark's favorite skirmishing units, which is the, what are those? Is something
Northkin Raiders.
Northkin Raiders, which is a fantastic example of, I would argue, is probably the best medium-based skirmishing unit around.
I love them so much, because, so when I first started the game, I was playing Protectorate, and I would play Sevi 1 with Errants, and they, with Rupert support, too, and the book, so that they were 14, 18, tough, steady. They had magic blessed crossbows. They basically out-skirmished any skirmish unit in the game.
Yeah.
And Raiders do a very similar thing. Under Creelstone and Madrek's Death Bubble, they're 15-16, which, in my opinion, is actually arguably better than 14-18 right now.
I would agree.
Their guns aren't as good, but they actually do more damage in melee slightly once you turn on the stone for damage. And they're just super obnoxious to kill. They're a cheaper package than Errants, too. They have quick work, similarly, and they have AoEs, so if there's not blast immunity, they can do some work.
And also,
they're just
10
the whole
of
package
them,
for,
yeah,
like, 15 points.
And 10 of them on medium bases just fills a really wide portion of the board, which is perfect for skirmishers, because it lets you dictate, just by having something in the way, whether your opponent can or cannot get to certain parts of the board.
They're a key part of why my Madrek list has, like, an 85%+ win rate going first. I'd have to go back through my numbers, but it's, like, something absurd. Because the Raiders, they start on the 13-inch line. They run to within 12 of Madrax, so they're like past the midline. Mm-hmm. And they're 15, 14, because you're probably not getting Creelstone to them that turn. But it means that you can run your Bears max, you can run your Glacier King max, you can run your Champs max, and you've just got this giant fist in the middle of the table. And the Raiders are basically the glove on that fist that's preventing it from getting cut up.
Yeah, and it's also the Raiders prevent people from counter-jamming because they have to just go into the Raiders, which you're fine with because you're like, that's what they're for. And very few armies have anything that peels the Raiders out effectively with that stat line.
Yeah, and if you put something light as a counter-jam into them, they'll just kill it and they'll quick work into the next line. And if your stuff is far enough forwards, I have Tactician, so I'm just going to go through my Raiders and move on with my life. Or if you're too far back, I'm like, okay, well, I'm holding all the zones. Like, you might be controlling the scoring tempo, but I'm holding the scoring zones. Like, good luck, friend.
Raiders, Northkin Raiders are an absolutely fantastic unit.
I can't believe I slept on them.
Yeah.
Like, I thought double Fire Eaters was going to be just infinitely better because of the boostable sprays, like all the assault shenanigans, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. Because two sets of Fire Eaters is 7 points to a 10-man unit's 15, but they're entirely different functions.
Yeah, and something that's striking me just hearing you talk about them is their similarity to Errants. You know, post-exemplar CID, like Mark II, Errants, premium faction-defining unit, mostly as heavy skirmishers. Mark III hits. They give them bad versions of the same rules. No one plays them.
Why take away their spell immunity? That's what I don't get. Like, that wasn't the thing that was, like, making them busted. They're just like, oh, let's turn this into a user-unfriendly mini-feat. Why? Sorry.
There's a lot of drunken knights at Privateer Press, and I don't think they can answer those questions.
Well, I love what they did with the Idrians, because the Idrians were, like, insane. They were, what, the Mark III equivalent of, like, 26 points for what they are currently? Like, that's insane. Like, why would you ever play them? But now they have their own niche, and now that they fixed Errants, like, there's reasons to take both, even though you can technically take Errants in the Exemplar Interdiction theme.
Yeah.
Like, even if they both contributed to points, I would, like, have a case for taking one over the other.
Yeah, yeah. And Errants post-CID went back to something very closely approximating their Mark II Prime. So, like, what makes them really good, their defensive stat line is kind of poor natively, but if you put any kind of adjustment onto it, mostly in defense, you'll result in wasting unsupported attacks on them, which is really important. Like, their defensive stats, you know, with tools that are readily accessible, jump to a point where they are not trivially killed. They're also packing self-sacrifice, which is an incredibly powerful defensive ability that just works incredibly well for preserving your position. They have natively, like, for early game infantry, they have natively good shooting. They have natively good melee attacks. They can handle a wide variety of targets effectively. They start up the board. There is so much support available to them. And quick work is just an amazing ability. Like, as long as this unit is getting stuck in, it is trading up. So it's the picture of a versatile unit that does a lot of things well up in the center of the board. It has some weaknesses when it comes to, like, topping out at power, and its guns aren't super great value. But defensively, everything's there, just like the Raiders. They have the ability to, you know, just balloon their output through quick work being a very beneficial rule. And their defenses are hardy enough that they will not just die on contact. I want to compare to another skirmishing unit in the same faction that I do not like nearly as much, which is the Idrian Skirmishers.
I would actually say that they're bordering on the straight shooter kind of archetype.
They almost are.
Because the CRA plus prey, they can get some output that's well above the bell curve. And so I find very often, like, you do the whole run, fail, charge, mini feat on top or bottom of one, and then they kind of just stay there shooting unless they give you a really juicy charge target. They never really do a proper skirmish.
Right. Well, that's the weird thing about the Idrians. So, like, just looking at their output, they can fight pretty much anything if they have prey. Like, it takes their damage and accuracy to a point where they're effective against it. but they are really wildly ineffective without it. So, you know, they can fight some things, kind of. Their defensive profile at 13-12 is just bad. And, like, if you stick defensive boosts on them, it helps a lot. But they need one not to die immediately. They have a once-per-game defensive ability, which is not insurmountable, but it's not nothing either. And then their primary source of protection comes from reposition.
The quick little reminder for people. Kulgrima feet will undig you in.
Yes, that's really not good for them.
This kills the Idrians.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
The unit has a lot of failings, and on its own, like, on its own, unsupported, is not an effective skirmishing unit. In fact, I think you guys are right. They really only are a skirmishing unit by dint of having advanced deployment, but otherwise they function like a gun unit. I've said this for a while, and I don't think it's a popular opinion, but for Idrians to function as skirmishers, they need a boost specifically to their defense, and they need an across-the-board buff to their offense at range.
But I think they're fine as is, to be honest. I just think they don't fit into the identity of skirmishers we have identified them. They have a place.
Sure. Yeah, they have a place, but, like, if I look back at the, you know, the history of Mark III and Idrians being much more popular, like, except for under the conditions of basically flat plus two defense and some kind of universal offensive buff, like, that's the unit I've run into the most early game and just bowled over without noticing.
Yeah, but I think that was also just a result of, for until the CID, the rest of the infantry shooters and Menoth were just not worth having.
Yeah.
And so I think that people were attempting to make the Idrians work under all circumstances as a replacement for what the Errants now are doing properly again.
Yeah. And the Errants are just, that unit is so amazing, like, picking up desperate pace. Like, they're really
and the marked target stuff, I love them. I can't wait to go back to playing Protectorate next year. Maybe, who knows, we'll see after War Machine weekend.
Yeah, and the beautiful part about Errants is they shred other skirmishers.
Yes,
like, their armor is high enough to actually just sometimes incidentally waste other skirmishers' attacks against them, like, without even the defensive buff, and then they'll just churn through them so fast.
So I want to pivot real quick to a different kind of skirmisher unit, and that's kind of like the cloud wall droppers. So in Mark II, historically, that was the druids, but more recently, we've got an actually table-playable version with the combat alchemists, which I love. Like, I love their design. Like, the fact that you can go in and, like, attack them, because they don't really repo three behind, so there's something to interact with, but if you do that, you're basically putting all your stuff right up at their army. And they just get their pick of the litter on what to kill.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really great design. You also have somewhat similar trenchers.
Trenchers were the very first original Cloudwallers.
Yeah.
No. Remember, they don't repo natively. You think they repo because...
it always happens with Haley 3.
Right. I'm just saying that... Yeah, I mean, Trenchers don't have native repo. That is an effect of a
Haley
3.
Though still, I think, like, the OG is the Druids, right?
Because no,
Druids
Trenchers
were able
the very
to do it
first.
Without... Well, Druids were able to... Druids were seeing play doing that without any support, whereas the Trenchers weren't really capitalizing on that trick until Haley 3.
Well, Trenchers... I mean, the Trencher smoke wall thing was extraordinarily oppressive in Mark I, if anyone remembers that far back. And they were, I mean, they were the only unit in the game for a while that had that ability, but they were also, like, tremendously overrepresented for a long time.
Yeah.
Mark II, they fixed that because it needed to be fixed. And then the Trencher thing sort of faded away. And at the end of Mark II, I can't recall seeing anyone playing Trenchers at all.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, with the Trencher CID, Trenchers have made a huge comeback. And boy, is it annoying to see that again.
Well, and they're just in the right place. Like, their Mat, Rat, and Pow are relatively good. Like, any kind of boost makes them hugely flexible, and Signar has access to those tools. They have a defensive ability and tough. They have Dig In, which is not always used. They have the clouds. Like, they have ways to get their own defenses up there.
Well, also in particular, I think they have very high resiliency against other skirmishing units, because a lot of skirmishing units try and use their dinky little guns to get in on you. So digging or the cloud wall is basically going to stop that cold.
Right. Yeah. Trenchers are like errands. Any little push takes them up to exceptional. And like the real reason units like skirmishers need this, like the reason why they're frankly just, if you look at their stats and abilities, among the best units in the game, is when and where they're fighting is in the phase where the entire army's firepower is, you know, up and running and will frequently be directed against them. This is a unit that rarely lives past, you know, the mid game, and their goal is to stare down an entire army. So you need a unit that's capable of doing that. And you really need to be playing them. I'd almost say, like, you need to decide whether they are going to get aggressive and, you know, just, like, hold down your opponent while you get position, or if they are going to try and make attrition gains, in which case you need to start running these units very conservatively and just starting fights with things one-on-one where they basically can't lose.
Well, so that, I mean, that's a good point to look at a very different type of skirmishing unit that we see a lot, which is the Mage Hunters. So the Mage Hunter unit, you know, they're skirmishers, but they don't want to bully up into front of the, you know, another unit and try to duke it out. Mm-hmm. But they are very effective at killing a lot of other light units and offering threats to very important key pieces, which puts them in a very interesting, because they can still bully part of the board without actually getting up and jamming.
Well, I think that gets into the territory of blurring the line between shooters and...
Yeah, I think Mage Hunters, like, they take a lot of board space, but they're almost like, they are almost skirmishers just by dint of having advanced deployment.
Well, and stealth.
Well, yeah, and stealth.
Stealth changes that profile a lot.
Because it means other skirmishers' guns doesn't work against them, which means, by and large, they out-threat pretty much any other skirmish unit in the game.
Yeah.
So I've got, I guess, a side question into the realm of skirmishers. How do we feel about light ambush units? Are they skirmishers, or are they kind of in a category of their own? So that would be like the Murder Crows, that would be like Pig Lookout, or yeah, they're lookouts. I always mix them up with Bushwhackers or whatever, but Pig Lookouts, I think even Mage Hunters can ambush now, right?
Infiltrators.
Yeah, the infiltrators
can, yeah.
Like, are those in the realm of skirmishers? Because, like, they're not really setting up a mid-game position where you're trying to hold the center of the board better and give space for your, like, more important units. But they're like, coming in from the side and, like, causing harassment and trying to, like, screw with your opponent.
Yeah. I'd almost describe them, like, I think that we could describe them that way. I'd almost say they're a special case because their principal job is to come in and hold down resources so they're not in the fight. So, like, except for bears, which are just come in and kill something.
Well, that's why I intentionally didn't include bears in them, because I kind of see them as in the categories later, like the dedicated combat units or, like, the small units.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel right now about ambush, because other than bears, most of the ambush units are much more a control point play than they are anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
If they come in and either contest or come and seize something where somebody wasn't paying attention on the side. And I don't feel like they're skirmishing per se. They're more just giving you a scoring option and hoping your opponent didn't think through necessarily what they're going to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or they did and it's still got some usable value, like forcing their position.
Right, and you know, like some of those skirmishing, ambush units can be really good at peeling out a single solo that's sitting on a flag off to the side. And so, you know, like you can get them off that flag and then, you know, either contest or threaten to score on a circle zone or something. But I mean, yeah, that's a different play option in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though some of them can be advanced deployed as skirmishers, a lot of those units have some weird limitations because they gain ambush. So they have a lot of hard caps on some of their abilities.
Yeah, I think a heuristic to see that you are leveraging skirmishers well, like just rule of thumb, are either, you know, you get to start the engagement with an alpha strike on terms you want, like your skirmishers did their job, they held your opponent in a position long enough for you to set up, or two to three of your opponent's units are gutted, like below 60%, and just vulnerable to being picked up by incidental fire.
And that's something I guess like I want to just like get formally out there is like I've seen a lot of people where they think they get the alpha strike because they hit my skirmishers.
Yeah,
but then my real stuff hits them, and they're like, oh, but I got the alpha strike off. Like, how could I have lost? I'm like,
you got the alpha strike off on 20% of my army. And that 20% didn't even go away.
The whole point of that was to die so that I could get on your real stuff.
Yeah, what's like, I mean, it's not true in Mark III anymore, but Mark II, I remember that's how I used to run to statistics raiders all the time, is that they were there to allow the rest of my army to do its thing.
And, yeah, Ashen Veil dub statistics.
And so, you know, that's one of those cornerstone things if determining whether something's actually a skirmisher or not. Like, if it's enabling the delivery of your real mechanic, they're skirmishing. If they're part of your core plan, they're probably not skirmishers at that point.
Right. Yeah, it has to be something that you don't really care if they live or die as long as your other pieces get to hit something before dying.
Right. Yeah, and that's one of those things, like, when you're building a list that has multiple infantry units, you're often looking for something like that. Like, I know, again, going back to my Signar example, you know, the new trencher theme really leverages that you have, you know, a unit of guys who you know are going to die. Like, those trenchers are not making the end game unless something really weird happens. But they're there to ensure that your warcaster and your long gunners don't die until they've gotten the work they need to get done.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for... Like, no doubt about it, with some exceptions, skirmishers prey on dedicated combat units, shooters, and, like, they are probably the best kind of unit that exists in the game, but because of when they need to function, they don't survive forever, and they tend to go away.
Right, and they're also, generally, you try to have them be reasonably good at blocking up heavy business heavies, who have really high power attacks but are a complete waste of time onto a skirmisher.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing more satisfying than watching somebody activate a heavy to kill a single trencher, and you're like, oh, darn. And that heavy is not killing something way more important, like your caster or, you know, your jack that's your only scoring piece anymore. You know, I mean, like, that's a perfect use for them.
Right. And that's a little bit where skirmishers fall down. Like, they're great value at getting heavies to waste their time, but most units that just have the right defensive suite of abilities and the right board position suite of abilities typically are not great against heavies. Like,
oh no, they're not. I mean, I don't expect trenchers to be killing a heavy. I mean, maybe with Siege 3 with Fury on them, you know, like, they can get work done, but that's not their purpose. Their purpose is to make those heavies' attacks valueless,
mm-hmm.
because I don't care if that trencher has to make a tough check and then immediately dies to another POW 20. You're like, oh, darn. So long as that heavy's not on something I care about, it's all good.
Right, yeah. And that's, yeah, they won't necessarily mangle them like they could with the right kind of support, but it's not what you're taking them for. And, like, the other thing, skirmishers tend to be support intensive just to bring their abilities up to spec. So, like, while I say they're the best kind of units, in no way would I suggest an army composed only of skirmishers. Nobody has enough scaling buffs for offense and defense to make that work.
And I'd like to make it very clear that I do not treat the lives of trenchers as a trivial issue, and the Trencher Union has my full and unstinting support for their service to the Swan.
Their service of getting hit with ice axes.
Hey, somebody needs to sometimes check to see if that axe is as sharp as we think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now we're going to pivot to the mainline combat units.
And actually, real quick, I do just want to break down just what is not a good skirmisher. So, like, I kind of described Idrians as borderline, like they need a specific set of support to get there. Trollkin Raiders are, like, basically... Northkin Raiders.
You fool!
Basically Troll Errants, is that fair to say?
Yeah, they fit a very similar role.
Yeah, and their defensive stats are just in the right place where, like, it takes even just the gentlest of push to make them a premium unit. Things that are not skirmishing units. Satixis Raiders, boy, how the mighty have fallen. I think the loss of advanced deploy is really what did it to them.
Right, but I mean, they changed their role now. I mean, you can't. They're now a mainline combat unit.
Yeah.
Versus where they used to be, like, honestly, the best skirmishing unit in the game, in my opinion, back in Mark II. Like, they were a unit I had in every list, and they never failed to disappoint me.
Oh no, yeah, it was.
Wait, they never failed to disappoint you?
Well, because they all died.
They were part of the big two, though. Like,
I know.
Aerons and Satixis Raiders were the most defining units of the last edition.
I guess Widowmakers were more of a counter to skirmishers. But right. God, those guys were a bane of my existence in Mark II. You would just have those five guys up front. It's like, oh, if you don't position correctly, half your Aeron unit is dead. Good job.
Yeah, I mean... And so, yeah, I mean, they're a unit that's completely changed, but that's fine. I mean, they moved the design space on them, and I think... Yeah, but I mean, that was a deliberate intention because they were too dominant, and I think that they wanted Krix, and they successfully, I think, moved Krix in a different direction away from them. And they're still a good unit, but the context of how you use them now is different.
Yeah. I guess that begs the question, does Krix really even have any dedicated skirmish units at this point?
The stupid Flappy Birds?
Sorry, dedicated skirmish units that are seeing play.
Okay.
Because they have a huge variety of lists, but they don't really seem to be playing that. And I almost wonder if that's, like, pumping up the numbers for Gatsby 3, because since he can take up so much board space anyways, you don't really need a skirmishing unit. And so I wonder if that's a premium inside of even Krix, outside of all of his amazing stuff.
Well, so, like, here's, you know, I talked about the gun carriages. I think Krix and something like Scar 1 is actually skirmishing with its battle engine, which is just capitalizing on its ability to nullify large suites of attacks against it, and you use that as your skirmishers. Like, there are non-unit skirmishers that can do the job, usually battle engines.
But wouldn't that kind of fall more in line with semi-segueing into our next thing? Dedicated combat units, because those Wraith engines can, like, they'll kill a heavy, they'll, like, kill three guys, like, they'll do whatever under Scar 1.
Mm-hmm. Right, but they're being used to, so you look at an army that's all main battle units, like, dedicated combat units are ultimately your game winners. They connect in the mid game, and they give you that surge that will push you through to either an outright win or a commanding lead in the late game. These units get ripped apart by skirmishers, but they have incredibly high value attacks when they get there. Usually melee. Some of the better ones are just, like, natively self-defending and don't need skirmishers to deliver them. And I think that's, you know, that's a big purpose that the Wraith engines, and to a certain extent the Stalkers, are being used for, is to skirmish for the Banes, who are not great at self-delivering. So examples of dedicated combat units, you know, typically melee, there to do their damage, get an overwhelming push, Dawnguard Sentinels, and by the way, that's the reason, like, pre-CID why Legions of the Dawn falls down, like, it never really worked, is it's like two dedicated combat units and nothing else, and they just die on the way in. Dawnguard Sentinels, Knight's Exemplar for a small example, Trollkin Champions, Bane Warriors and Bane Knights.
Bane!
Yeah, it's kind
of... he's a merc.
Actually, that's a fall-down point for Signar, is accepting Storm Lances. They don't have any that are good at this job.
They have nothing which is particularly good at that job.
They just put Fury on something and hope that's
Yeah.
Well, let's be clear. Signar still has Hammer Dwarves, which are still the only go-to melee weapon master.
Hammer Dwarves with Diggin. Okay.
Dude, they're legit almost not hittable with Diggin. You can still hit them. Secret. Don't tell anyone, though.
They get up to, what, 14, 18? Congratulations, you have hit D-warded errant status.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, but they're speed 4 with no ability to get Pathfinder. Super good.
Sweet.
Dope.
Yeah.
But they get assault. They can throw their hammers, right?
I have argued that they should be able to, but no one has... agreed with me to date.
They should make a Hammer Dwarf UA that gives them a mini feat that lets them throw their hammers.
Or just give them pistols or something.
No. Pistols are a coward's weapon. throwing hammers. That's a true dwarf weapon.
You know what they need is they need, you know, like that Battle Angel Attila, like rocket hammer thing.
Alita,
whatever.
Attila?
Yeah.
Attila?
Attila, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Battle Angel Attila.
Dude, yeah, that would be cool.
I'm just imagining Attila the Hun as like an anime girl.
Oh, that'd be so good.
Okay, all right.
We are creating some quality content for you listeners right now.
All right, dedicated combat units.
Speaking of, sorry. Have you guys seen the Bowsette stuff or whatever?
Oh my god, that's everywhere now.
Oh
too. It's
god,
hilarious.
It's horrifying.
What is this?
They've turned Bowser into a hot woman. I don't understand why. Like apparently, like Nintendo implied that this was possible, and the internet has been
As far as I can tell,
over the past 48 hours, like it's only sprung up in the past like
as I can tell, one of the Nintendo people, and I could be totally wrong here because I only saw like. After it was already exploding everywhere, that somebody who had some association with Nintendo as an artist had posted a sort of joke female Bowser image, like it was just a sketch, and I guess you know there's a lot of artists in that community who went nuts on it, and then there was another type of artist who also went quote nuts on it.
Yeah, that's what that is. I'm looking at it right
like,
now.
Like, I was just browsing Reddit, like, the other day, and it just, like, showed up and all. I was what is going on?
Oh, yeah, and it went. And so, by the way, not only have they done Bowsette, they have now done, like, all the rest of the villains from different various Mario games as, like, female princess characters. It is both disturbing and impressive how rapidly it has evolved.
Welcome to the future.
I'm also impressed how many people who are genuinely talented artists produce crap like this within 12 hours of it hitting the internet. I mean, like some of the art was genuinely, I'm like, wow, that is a really good piece of art that I don't approve of.
Art.
No, I mean, like it's a really well-rendered, incredibly inappropriate drawing that has just shown up on my thread. But I'm like, how, like this entire thing's less than 12 hours old and people
Uppers.
Are already producing this sort of stuff.
Uppers.
I wish I had
Nintendo
that kind of
guy
talent to burn.
Posted a maybe Bowsette thing. I'm going to do some coke and fuel the movement.
Well, I think it's mostly just like four or five Red Bulls. I feel like most artists don't do coke. I could be wrong.
Sure, take the magic out of everything.
I think it depends. I mean, if you're in Hollywood and you're in film, you're doing coke. I think that most of the hardcore anime people are not doing coke because they don't have the money for that. So you're right. They're doing either Red Bull or maybe they just can't sleep because they're in their manic phase. And so therefore they do weird hentai Bowsette art.
Sorry, what were we discussing before this? Tangent went longer than I wanted. I'm sorry for starting it.
All right.
No, you're not.
I am.
It's actually 150. What I'm going to suggest, since we've gotten through skirmishers and shooters.
Break it into two eps.
Yeah, take 5 minutes. We'll come back and talk about combat units.
Okay,
and
do we
want to
record like a interstitial, or are we just going to go like, but...
Thank you for listening to Dominate for Two. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Got a question or an episode idea? Email us at dominateforto.podcast@gmail.com.
We can record an interstitial. We can talk about like, hey, we're long-winded assholes, and here's the episode part two
of
what should have been a one-hour thing.
I mean, like, are we going to record something like, we're going to finish this, like, next week?
Oh, you mean like a little thing? We never do that.
Sorry, like an outro. Yeah. That's actually something that's bothered me on some
okay,
of our
well, let's do that.
Where we're just like, ah, f*** it. Like, we're in the middle of this great discussion, and bam, like, straight to outro music.
Yeah.